Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
This is Jana Kramer from Wind Down with Jana Kramer. Hey, quick question for the parents listening right now. When's the last time your kid asked for something and you actually felt good saying yes? Because lately, a lot of families have been hearing the same thing. Can I have Lingo Kids, please? And here's the thing. Lingo Kids is the number one entertainment platform for young kids with more than 4,000 interactive games, songs, and shows. Astronauts, wild animals, superheroes, dinosaurs. It's literally everything kids love all in one place. So when they ask for it, you can actually feel good saying yes. Download Lingo Kids for free and start exploring today, or unlock even more amazing content with Lingo Kids Plus. And if you go with the yearly plan, you can save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play. Lingo Kids, everything kids love.
On March 15th, 2000, 27-year-old Tina McQuaig went to work at a Jacksonville hospital like it was any other Wednesday. Before getting off work, she called home to say she was running a little late and planned to stop at the grocery store before heading home to her husband and 4-year-old son, but Tina would never make it home. During an intense investigation, several secrets were revealed, but more than 26 years later, her case remains unsolved, leaving everyone asking, what happened to Tina McQuaig? Hey everyone, welcome back to Detective Perspective. My name is Derek Levasseur. I'm a licensed private investigator and former police detective. Each week I'll be covering an unsolved case in story format. I'll then give you my perspective on the investigation and provide contact information for the individuals or organizations connected to the case so that if you have any tips, you can contact them directly and maybe you can help solve a case. So if you're someone who's interested in true crime, specifically unsolved cases, and you would like to hear my opinion on those investigations, please consider subscribing whether you're watching on YouTube or listening on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or whatever platform you use. Just a quick note, when you guys are hearing or seeing this episode, it's probably June 1st or June 2nd. I'm actually recording this episode much earlier. I think it's, what's the date today? We're looking at May 20th. And the reason I'm recording ahead of time is next week I'm heading off to CrimeCon in Las Vegas, and I'm hoping that I'm getting to meet a bunch of you. So when you're actually checking out this episode, I'm probably on a flight home. I was considering taking the week off during CrimeCon, but you know how I feel about that. There are some times where it's unavoidable, whether it's family obligations or the holidays or just other conflictions with work, that I can't record, and it's just, there's no way around it. But if I have the ability to record, I like to do it. There's so many case submissions that we have at this point, and there's so many stories that need to be told. I feel like every week we don't put out an episode is a week wasted. So that's where we are. It's May 20th, 2 o'clock in the morning, but I'm prepared to talk about this case, and it's an interesting one. So let's transition. Tina McQuaig reminds me of a couple cases that I've covered in the past. And if you've been with me for a while, then you'll know the name Judy Rawlings. And if you're a Crime Weekly fan, then you'll know the name Brandy Hall. And this case has a lot of similarities to that one. And the big lesson that I take away from this case, at least for me, and probably for you as part-time detectives, is when we have a crime like this, there are going to be suspects and they're going to have secrets. But in certain cases, the victims had secrets as well. And with those secrets, sometimes they're more important. And as I mentioned in the teaser of this episode, there's going to be several twists and turns. And I always try to learn from these investigations, what to do, what not to do. But one lesson that I think is very important for all you part-time detectives out there is when you have a crime like this, yes, there's going to be suspects and they're going to have secrets. But in some cases, the victims will have secrets as well. And those secrets can be more critical to solving the case. And so we're going to go over everything. We're going to talk about everyone that we know is involved with this investigation so far. And I'm looking forward to hearing your thoughts on this one. We have a lot to cover, so let's dive into this week's case. Tina Marie Rice was born on May 5th, 1972 in El Paso, Texas to her parents Elmer and Linda. She grew up in the Jacksonville, Florida area alongside her brother and what has been described as a very close and loving family. As a child and teenager, Tina was known for her kind personality. Those who knew her said she loved everybody, made friends easily, and was well-liked by everyone. While attending high school, Tina met a fellow student named Otis McQuaig. The two started dating and stayed together through the rest of high school and beyond graduation. Then in 1995, around 5 years after graduating, Tina and Otis got married. The couple settled in Baldwin, Florida, just outside of Jacksonville, and not long after, they welcomed their son, Tyler. From the moment he was born, Tyler became the center of Tina's world. Professionally, Tina had been working as a pharmacy technician at a local hospital, which was Shands of Jacksonville at the time. It's now known as UF Health Jacksonville. Tina loved her job so much that she decided to become a pharmacist, and by early 2000, she was studying to take her licensing exam. Otis was also focused on his future, studying to become an air conditioning mechanic. At the same time, the couple had started talking about buying property where their house was located, which was owned by Otis's brother. By all accounts, they were building a life together and moving toward the future they had planned. But those plans would never come to fruition. On March 15th, 2000, Otis was scheduled to take his air conditioning mechanics exam. So that morning, the couple got ready for work together like they normally did. They kissed, said I love you, and headed off to work. Neither of them knew this would be the last time they would see each other. It was a slow day at the pharmacy, so Tina spoke with her father several times on the phone, but those conversations were routine and nothing stuck out. Meanwhile, Otis completed his exam and then went to work, and at the end of the day, he headed home, but Tina hadn't gotten there yet, so he went inside to relieve his sister-in-law, who had been babysitting 4-year-old Tyler. According to the Florida Times Union, Otis's sister-in-law told him that at around 4:30 p.m., Tina called and said that she was going to be a little late getting home. She planned to stop at the grocery store after getting off work at 5 p.m. After that, Otis's sister-in-law left and Otis decided to start dinner, but by the time he finished, Tina still had not come home. So at approximately 6 p.m., he put Tyler to bed, and then he called Tina's parents to ask if they had seen or heard from her, and they said no. Otis then started calling Tina's friends to see if anyone knew where she was, but no one had seen or heard from her, and by that point, he was becoming increasingly worried. Disappearing without explanation was completely out of character for Tina. At around 9 p.m., Otis decided to drive the route that Tina would have taken home from work. He just wanted to make sure that she hadn't broken down somewhere or gotten stranded. He first drove toward the hospital, but by that time, it was closed. He was unable to get into the hospital or the parking garage to see if Tina's vehicle was there, so instead, he drove through the public parking lot looking for any sign of her, but there was nothing. Otis then stopped at the grocery store Tina would have gone to after work, hoping maybe someone had seen her or her vehicle might still be there, but again, there was nothing. So without any other place to go, he returned home, and unfortunately, she still had not come back. At approximately 10:30 p.m., Otis called the police to report 27-year-old Tina missing. But he was told there was nothing officers could do until she had been gone for at least 24 hours. Otis made it clear that disappearing like this was completely out of character for Tina, but the police would not budge. So he stayed home, and he waited. But Tina did not come back, and by the next morning, she had not shown up for work either. At around 6:30 a.m., Otis called Tina's parents and they came over to the house. He then called the police again and insisted they needed to start an investigation, but Tina's family later said that officers still were not taking the situation seriously. So at that point, Tina's father takes the phone and he tells them that something's wrong and they need to start looking for her. And finally, the police agree to investigate Tina's disappearance. And it's unfortunate that it took that much to get them off the couch to start doing their job. And as we get more into this investigation, you will see that that window where they waited to actually do something could be critical to this case. When you find out what happened here, it does make you wonder, when this initial call was made, was there still an opportunity to save Tina? So after this phone call, investigators went to the hospital to speak with Tina's coworkers. No one noticed anything unusual about her behavior the previous day, and no one had any reason to believe anything was wrong. Police also reviewed surveillance footage from around the time Tina got off work at 5 p.m., and the footage showed Tina leaving the parking garage alone in her vehicle. But after that, there was no trace of her. And just like Otis had, investigators searched the routes that Tina could have taken home looking for any sign of her or her vehicle. But nothing turned up, so a bolo was sent out asking officers to keep an eye out for Tina and her car. Days passed and there was still no sign of her, which led investigators to believe foul play was involved. Then, on March 19th, 4 days after Tina vanished, investigators finally got a break in the case. Tina's car was found in the parking lot of a Walmart on Normandy Boulevard in Jacksonville. And we're going to talk about what they found and where this led them after the break. You've heard me talk about Hungry Root before, so you know how much I love it because it truly simplifies my life. As a busy parent and someone who works a lot of long, crazy hours, it's been such a game changer when it comes to helping to reach my health goals by doing all my weekly food shopping with Hungry Root. And the plans are all tailored specifically to me, what I'm looking for, and also what my palate has become over the years. Hungry Root plans all of my meals and groceries for the week, fills my car, and delivers everything I'll need to eat healthy every day, all while fitting my health goals, dietary preferences, and budget. Just the other night, I had their zesty pulled chicken stuffed peppers, and I was able to make the whole thing in under 15 minutes, which goes for most of the Hungry Root recipes. And I did cheat a little bit last week. I had the kids up early. I'm trying to stay away from carbs right now, but not gonna lie to you, busted open the croissants. They're the absolute best. I don't care. I can't get rid of them completely. They feel like I got them from a bakery. Honestly, you throw them in the oven, they come out 15 minutes later, and literally it feels like I just picked them up. They're delicious. And yeah, you got to throw a little butter or jam on them. How else are you going to have them? Plus, my personal favorite, if you're going to Hungry Root and you're like, what is Derek like? Check out the chickpea cookie dough. That's my absolute favorite dessert with them. I want you to try it and tell me if you can taste the difference. I dare you. I guarantee you, you're going to say, no, he was right. This is absolutely delicious. Tastes just like cookie dough. And unlike other food delivery companies, Hungry Root now has over 50,000 chef-crafted recipes to choose from each week, with many ready in just 15 minutes or less. And with over 1,000 grocery items like smoothies, sweets, kid snacks, salad kits, ready-to-eat meals, and supplements, it's insanely easy to find options that fits everyone's taste and nutritional goals. Hungry Root holds all of its food to high standards, screening out over 200 additives, including high fructose corn syrup, artificial sweeteners, and preservatives. They source only high-quality meat and seafood with no hormones or antibiotics, offer organic produce and non-GMO options, and carry trusted healthy brands like Oatly, Vital Farms, Ithaca Hummus, Harmless Harvest, and many more. I think you're going to love Hungry Root as much as I do. And for a limited time, you can get 40% off your first box, plus get a free item in every box for life. Just go to hungryroot.com/detective and use my code detective. That's hungryroot.com/detective, code detective, to get 40% off your first box and a free item of your choice for life. All right, we're back. So let's talk about Tina's car. An investigation discovery reported that Tina's car had been parked far from the store entrance near the entryway to the parking lot and adjacent to Normandy Boulevard. Inside the vehicle, investigators found Tyler's car seat and Tina's lab coat. The only things missing were her purse and keys, and there was no signs of vandalism or anything to suggest that the vehicle had been stolen and abandoned there. To investigators, based on what they found, it appeared possible that maybe Tina went to this parking lot, met someone there, and then left with that person in their vehicle. But when they asked Tina's family about this Walmart location, they were confused. This was not the normal store that Tina would shop at, so no one could understand why Tina or her vehicle would have ended up there. But to me, when I first heard this, the fact that this wasn't Tina's normal parking location, that actually made more sense to me when you considered what could possibly be going on here. And as we get into more of the details, I think it's going to make sense to you as well. So at that point, investigators had Tina's car towed and processed for evidence, though as far as I can tell, it's unclear if anything was found. Detectives also searched the area surrounding the Walmart, which is mostly commercial and residential properties. Additionally, there were several wooded areas that they believed were worth focusing on, so they brought in a canine unit and those areas were searched as well, but from what I've gathered, there was no sign of Tina. And so after these physical searches were conducted and nothing of evidentiary value was found, investigators switched their focus back to basic police work, which meant taking a closer look at Tina and Otis's marriage. Now, Otis appeared to be a grieving husband, but detectives needed to figure out whether that was genuine or not. So they brought him in for questioning, and during that interview, investigators learned for the first time that Tina and Otis had been having problems in their marriage. Otis explained that in or around early December 1999, Tina came to him and said she was unhappy and wanted a divorce. He said this came as a complete surprise. According to him, they did have their little arguments and stuff like that, but no major issues, so this was not something that he saw coming. Otis went on to say that he didn't want a divorce, so he asked Tina to stay at least through Christmas, and she agreed. And throughout all of December, he did everything he could to save the marriage, including buying her flowers and consistently telling her how much he loved her. And apparently this worked, because Otis told investigators after Christmas, Tina had a change of heart and she decided that she wanted to stay. And for those of you saying, well, maybe he's lying, apparently from what we've learned, Tina also told her parents the same thing, saying, quote, "I love Otis and I want to stay." By January of 2000, Otis said life seemed to be back to normal. The couple continued talking about buying the property where they lived, and both were focused on building their futures. Otis said the next 3 months were great. Then on March 15th, Tina disappeared without warning. He told investigators that on the day she disappeared, he went to that exam and then he was at work all day, and he insisted he had nothing to do with Tina's disappearance. Otis also agreed to take a polygraph examination, which showed no signs of deception. Investigators then looked into his alibi and were able to back it up. He had been at work, just like he said. And with that, Otis was eliminated as a suspect. And this does seem like the right move, right? You can't physically be in two places at once. I will say it is possible that Otis could still indirectly be involved, especially when you consider the fact that he would have a motive, right? He found out that his wife wanted a divorce. Maybe he didn't want her to be with anybody else, and he could have enlisted the help of another person. I do want to point out, though, that as far as I can tell, he's been consistent throughout the years, and he's maintained a very good relationship with Tina's family. So whatever that means to you, you can take it as you want, but he's been completely cooperative with law enforcement and has even spoken to the media in conjunction with Tina's family. So with Otis eliminated as a suspect, investigators turned their attention to conducting interviews with Tina's friends and co-workers. As they spoke with people close to her, they learned that Tina had a best friend named Tammy, who seemed to know more about what was going on in Tina's life than anybody else. Police brought Tammy in for an interview, and during that conversation, she revealed something investigators had not known. Tina had been having an affair with a co-worker, who I'm going to call James because his real name has never been publicly released. With this new information, investigators started to wonder whether James could have had anything to do with Tina's disappearance. They told Otis about the affair, and he said he had no idea that Tina had been seeing someone else. Investigators brought James in for questioning as well, and initially, he was very cooperative. He denied having anything to do with Tina's disappearance and said that he had been out at an electrical contracting job at another location the day she vanished, so he was not on site at the hospital, according to him. So at that point, police asked James to take a polygraph examination, but he declined and hired an attorney. After that, he stopped speaking with investigators. I know how you guys feel about this. Some people are okay with it. Some people aren't. They think it's suspicious. I think it can go both ways. For me personally, I've been pretty consistent on this. I have no issue with someone hiring an attorney, but I would still cooperate with law enforcement as long as my attorney was present. If you can help in the investigation, that's what I would choose to do. But I also understand that sometimes you can want to do the right thing and you just say it the wrong way and it can get you in some hot water when you didn't do anything wrong. So I understand the hesitancy and I try not to judge too much, but I do understand how his behavior going from cooperative to not saying another word could come off as suspicious. And if you feel that way, you're not the only one, because it was suspicious to the investigators in this case as well. And they decided to look further into James's alibi. And from what we've learned, his employer did confirm that he had been at the job all day long. So according to police, they were able to clear him of any involvement in Tina's disappearance. The only pushback I would have, and I'm assuming they would have an answer for this, we know that Tina left work at approximately 5 p.m. Most construction jobs that I know of, they're done by 2, 3, 4, maybe 5 the latest. I know there's some anomalies out there, so don't come for me in the comments. But I would think that he would be wrapping up for the day around 5 p.m. So my question to that employer would be, okay, he was there for the entire day. What was that consisting of? What time did he start? What time did he end? He did a full day's work. That's fine. But when did he leave? And if the employer responds and says, yeah, he left around 5:15, well, that means he doesn't have an alibi. That means that his time after leaving work is unaccounted for. And we don't know what time Tina would have met up with someone. Was it right at 5:15? Or was it 5:30, 5:45? These are just some of the questions I have that I wish law enforcement would provide answers to, because it would absolutely provide clarity and give more credence to James's alibi. Investigation Discovery reported that after James was cleared by law enforcement, the investigation slowed down due to a lack of leads. Investigators continued doing whatever they could to bring attention to Tina's case, including working with America's Most Wanted and cops. But despite all the publicity, no major leads came in. For more than 2 years, there was little movement in the case. Then, on December 26, 2002, there was finally a major development. Human remains belonging to a woman were discovered by a land surveyor at Cecil Field, located just 10 miles farther down the same road where Tina's car had been found. Now, for context, Cecil Field is a former naval base that is now known as Cecil Airport. At the time Tina disappeared, the base was not fully open to the public, but employees had easy access. There were guards posted at the entrance who were supposed to write people's name down as they entered and left, but if you were an employee, you were often waved through without question. And that detail is going to become important when we talk about potential suspects a little later. Let's go back and talk about the remains that were found. Unfortunately, they had been scattered due to animal activity, but investigators were able to find bits of clothing and personal belongings nearby, including a wedding ring and a watch. Based on the location and the items recovered, investigators believe the remains could belong to Tina. Photographs of the belongings were shown to the family, and they immediately recognized them. Otis had purchased the ring for Tina, and Tina's mother had given her the watch as a Christmas gift shortly before she disappeared. Tina's family believed the remains belonged to her, and so did the investigators. But they said an autopsy and DNA testing would need to be completed before an official identification could be made. During the autopsy, the medical examiner found no trauma that could explain exactly how the woman died. There was nothing to indicate whether she had been shot, bludgeoned, or suffered any other type of injury, making it impossible to determine an exact cause of death. And this is where I had mentioned in the top of the show that this case had some similarities to Judy Rawlings from North Carolina. Similar set of circumstances there, where by the time her body was found, with the decomposition process, animal predation, and the body being scattered, with all that soft tissue damage, it was never really determined exactly how Judy died. We do have suspicions, and I've talked about that, but nothing definitive. And I think that's what happened here. When you're trying to think of a visual, I don't think this was a full body when it was found, and it was probably in really rough shape. DNA samples taken from the remains were sent off for testing in hopes of making an identification. Then months later, in March of 2003, investigators got that confirmation. The remains did in fact belong to Tina McQuaig. Based on the circumstances surrounding her case, the medical examiner then ruled her manner of death homicide by violence, which makes perfect sense. We see this all the time. Even though the medical examiner couldn't determine cause of death based on the condition of the body, you still can consider the totality of circumstances, how the body was found, the condition it was in, the circumstances surrounding Tina's disappearance, no indication of a tragic accident, and you can still come to the reasonable conclusion that her death was at the hand of another, aka homicide by violence. Now, you may think that we've already talked about the twists and turns in this case, but you would be wrong. There's another big one, and we're going to talk about it right after the break, because this could be the strongest person of interest. You guys may not know this about me, but I love to sleep. I don't get normal sleep like a lot of you. I sleep weird hours, but once I get to bed and I'm actually there, it's hard to wake me up. So I need a comfortable mattress and I need really comfortable sheets. And if you wake up too sweaty or too cold or just uncomfortable, that really can impact your sleep quality. And the temperature in your bedroom can make or break your sleep. And that's why I switched to Miracle Made sheets. They're inspired by NASA technology and use silver-infused temperature-regulating fabric to help me sleep at the perfect temperature all night long. So if you're a hot sleeper, cold sleeper, it doesn't matter. These sheets will help keep you in the comfort zone so you get a great night's sleep. And thanks to their antibacterial silver technology, Miracle Made sheets stay cleaner and fresher up to 3 times longer than regular sheets. That means fewer odors, fewer wash cycles, and way less laundry. And the most important part, they feel just as good, if not better, than sheets that I've used in 5-star hotels, but without the steep price tag. So they're smooth, they're breathable, and they're insanely comfortable. They're also great for your skin. All that hidden bacteria that you can find in regular sheets, they clog your pores, they cause breakouts. I'm not looking for any of that at 42 years old. I don't think you are either. And Miracle Made's antibacterial design will help you sleep cleaner, clearer, night after night. So upgrade your sleep or give the gift of better rest. Go to trymiracle.com/detective to try Miracle Made sheets today. You'll save over 40%, and when you use my promo code DETECTIVE, you'll get an extra 20% off, plus a free 3-piece towel set. They make an amazing gift, and with a 30-day money-back guarantee, there's really no risk. That's trymiracle.com/detective, code DETECTIVE at checkout. Thanks to Miracle Made for sponsoring this episode. Have you ever heard a true paranormal story that stuck with you for years? Like, you wish you could forget it, but you just can't? That's exactly what you get with the Monsters Among Us podcast. Every week, real people call in and share their true encounters with the unexplained. So I'm talking ghosts, strange creatures, time that's unaccounted for, things that just don't make sense. And here's the twist. You hear these stories from the witnesses' own voices. So it almost feels a little too real. I some of the episodes I listened to, I'm like, all right, man, I don't think I need to know this. There's enough going on in the world. Like, there was this one story with this girl, Julie, where she drives past this fatal car accident and then realizes she has this ghostly hitchhiker who turns out to be the deceased victim from that car accident. Or there was a caller who saw these 3 strange entities in the woods moving in unison, and then she lost a whole 8 hours that are completely unaccounted for. Just doesn't know what happened, can't explain it. Or there's Mac from Mississippi, who broke his back when he fell out of a tree stand, only to be nursed back to health by a maternal Sasquatch. Yeah, literally, that one's going to stick with you. The show is hosted by Derek Hayes, who pulls these calls together into something that feels like a late-night radio show that you probably shouldn't be listening to alone. It's got that classic Unsolved Mysteries vibe mixed with the eerie storytelling style of Art Bell. And here's the best part. There's over 500 episodes already waiting for you. So if you're into the paranormal or just a little curious, this is a deep rabbit hole, so be prepared. Go check out Monsters Among Us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, or wherever you get your podcasts. Okay, we're back, and I want to get right into it because, as I mentioned before the break, there's still a few unexpected turns. So now that Tina had been located, investigators went back to the beginning and started looking at the case with fresh eyes. they essentially treated the investigation like it was brand new. And when they started from the beginning, there was one thing that immediately stood out. At the start of the investigation, someone had mentioned a neighbor of Tina's that the police should look into. Now, we don't know this man's real name, so I'm going to call him Adam. What we do know is that Adam and his wife were friends with Tina and Otis. There were also rumors that Adam and Tina may have been having an affair. We also know that Adam worked at Cecil Field, the same place where Tina's remains had been found. Early on in the investigation, investigators on the case actually spoke with Adam, and something about the interaction stuck with them. Investigators said that at first he was cooperative, but over time his behavior became more deceptive. It raised some concerns, but back then, Adam was not considered a person of interest. But now, with Tina's remains being found at the same location where Adam worked, investigators decided to bring him in for questioning and to take a polygraph. However, before this could happen, investigators received a tip. Someone told them that Adam planned to try and sabotage the polygraph by using products he believed could influence the results. Things like putting deodorant on his fingertips and drinking NyQuil to try and dampen psychological responses. After hearing this, detectives moved forward with the interview as planned. Adam agreed to take the polygraph, and while preparations were being made, police searched his vehicle. Inside, investigators found both deodorant and NyQuil. Despite these findings, detectives still moved forward with the examination. During the polygraph, Adam was asked whether he had been having an affair with Tina and whether he had anything to do with her disappearance. He said no to both, but investigators later said the results were, quote, very deceptive. After the interview, investigators asked Tina's family about Adam. Otis said that he had no idea Tina had been involved with him and told detectives he did not believe there was any way Adam could be involved in her disappearance. But the more Otis thought about it, the more something started to bother him. He later went back to investigators and said that after Tina first disappeared, something about Adam had not sat right with him. Friends and family had gathered at the house after Tina went missing, but Adam never came around, which Otis thought was strange because Adam and his wife had been friends with both Tina and Otis. Investigators remained suspicious of Adam and continued looking into his background. During that process, they learned that within a few months of Tina's disappearance, Adam and his wife divorced. She moved to Daytona while he moved to Georgia. That really stood out to detectives because during his interview, Adam claimed that he and his wife had a great marriage and there were no problems around the time Tina disappeared. But based on what detectives had uncovered, that did not seem to be true. And so there you go. There's one last curveball in the story and just another layer to this case. And there's a lot here to unpack as far as Adam, his potential motives, and his connection to Cecil Field. This is, again, a naval base. Not everyone had access to this location. So to think that there was a neighbor who was in close proximity to our victim, who already had rumors surrounding both him and Tina as far as them being involved in extracurricular activities, now you have this. You have him and his wife separating shortly after Tina's disappearance. And it would be unreasonable for us not to ask why. Does Adam's wife know something that we don't? Did she do her own investigation and figure out that not only was Adam and Tina having an affair, but potentially Adam was connected to her disappearance and death? Was that why they separated? Was that why she decided to move an entire state away from him? Only she knows, and I will tell you, I won't save it for the perspective. If I was working this case right now, that would be the main person that I would want to speak with, because I'll tell you what, a previous partner who was with the person that I'm looking at the time of the occurrence, if there's a strained relationship between them, that's the crack that you want to try to expose. And maybe investigators at the time did attempt to do that, but unfortunately, they must have been unsuccessful because despite continuing to look into Adam, investigators never developed enough evidence to officially name him or anyone else as a person of interest. And with nowhere else to go, the case went cold again. Then in 2011, which would mark 11 years since Tina was murdered, investigators renewed their efforts to try and solve the case. They announced a $5,000 reward for information leading to the arrest and conviction of the person or people responsible for Tina's murder. Investigators said there were, quote, some people of interest, though they would not comment any further about their possible involvement. They also said evidence existed in the case, just not enough to secure a conviction. They needed what was described as, quote, that one little piece that leads to solving the crime. Unfortunately, the reward did not lead to an arrest, and the case remained cold. And this is what I talk about all the time, right? It's not necessarily the smoking gun that they're looking for, just the missing link. They may have a couple critical pieces of evidence, but they don't have that piece of the puzzle to tie it all together or to tie it to a specific person. And that's what they're looking for right now. Okay, let's fast forward to March of 2025, 25 years after Tina had been murdered. That month, Dateline featured her case in an effort to bring renewed attention, and investigators shared, in my opinion, kind of demoralizing update. They said that all leads had been exhausted and they were still looking for that one piece of information where, to me, it's like, okay, I get it. You're coming out. You want to be part of the episode to make sure that people know that you're still thinking about this case. You're still working it. I don't know. I've seen this before and I understand the rationale. You have to participate. I get it. But it's almost better off just saying nothing, because what you're really saying is we don't know. We don't have any evidence to work off of here. We're just hoping that someone else comes forward. And maybe that's all you need to say. We're just looking for that piece of information. I get it. But as a family member, as a friend, I'd be sitting at home and I would not be feeling too great about this quote unquote update. Now, what I did like was that Tina's mother, Linda, who was 74 years old at the time, also spoke with Dateline. And she said that Tina's son, who was only 4 years old when his mother disappeared, now had a child of his own, meaning that Tina would have been a grandmother. Linda said, quote, Tyler doesn't even remember her, but he knows he has a mama. He knows she's watching over him. And to me, that right there is what this is all about. And if you're looking for an incentive, for a motivation to keep pushing forward in this case, not only for us, but for the investigators on the ground, that's it right there. We're looking at 25 plus years since Tina was murdered. She's gone. We're not going to bring her back. But there's people out there to this day who are still affected by this case. You have a young man who now has a child of his own who thinks about this woman he never got the chance to know. And that's trauma. That's pain that they experience every single day, probably every time he looks into his son or daughter's eyes. And it shouldn't be that way. He should know that the person responsible for taking his mom is behind bars. But unfortunately, that is the last update we have in Tina's case. Her murder remains unsolved, and after all these years, her family is still hoping that one day her killer will finally be brought to justice. All right, let's dive into this perspective, and I want to talk about some of the main players in this case. I want to dive a little deeper on them, get your opinions on it, and then I want to transition to where we go from here. And we're going to start with Otis, because I know Otis has been cleared, and I'm not suggesting that he's involved, because it does appear that he would have been physically incapable of killing her, meaning he can't be at two places at once. And I do think that investigators probably confirmed his alibi, and then also, when you think about the timeline and when he got home, there wouldn't be a large window there where he could have met up with Tina, killed her, disposed of her body, and then got back to the babysitter when he did. But that doesn't clear him of any potential wrongdoing, in my opinion. What if he found out what was going on with Tina? What if he figured out that she was, in fact, having an affair with one person, maybe two people, maybe more? And there was a lot of anger, a lot of resentment there. As he mentioned, she had already told him she wanted a divorce and he was trying to save the marriage. Now, I know it got better, according to him, but do we really know that? Is there a scenario where he realized that she was going to leave him, probably for another man, and he wasn't going to allow that to happen? So he enlisted the help of somebody else. I don't know if it's a colleague, a friend, or just some private individual that has no previous connection to him. And because he knew where Tina would be and where she might be going, this person was able to intercept her. And at that point, things went down the way they did, and she ended up at Cecil Field. Do I think this is what happened? No. Can I sit here and tell you that it's not possible? No. We're here to explore all scenarios. So although I'm going to publicly say, I don't think Otis is the guy, and I'm going to acknowledge that he's been cleared. I also want to put out there that there is an angle here where he could have some indirect involvement. Although if that were the case, you would hope if the police officers were worth their, you know, what they were getting paid, they would be able to reverse engineer this, see his communications, and realize that he was in contact with someone who was also in contact with Tina. Moving on from him, because I do think there are more viable people to discuss in this particular case, I want to transition to James. From what we've learned, based on what Tina's best friend told us, she was having an affair with James at one point, or maybe even during the time when she disappeared. And this is another scenario, and I mentioned this during the episode, where it appears that James has an alibi for most of the day. He worked at the hospital, but he also had this electrical contracting job that was offsite. And according to his employer or whoever was overseeing the job site, James was there all day long. And so I would want to know, what did that day consist of? What time did they start? What time did they end? Because this is a person who would have also known Tina's schedule, right? He worked there with her. So he would know what time she got off work. And if they were in fact having an affair, I have to imagine that some of their encounters happened shortly after leaving work around 5 p.m. And, you know, where Tina would say, I have to go somewhere. And, you know, whatever the case may be, they would meet up and then they would go their separate ways. So this would have been a common occurrence. And so if he knew that Tina was getting out of work and they had made plans to meet up, he could have been at work all day. But if his job ended at 4:30 or even 5, is it possible, based on the location of this job site, that he could have met up with her at the Walmart and they could have went somewhere? Absolutely. And when we're talking about motive, I don't know what James's situation was because his information has never been publicly released. But there's a possibility that he was married as well. And maybe he didn't want other people knowing what he was doing. So could they have met up? And maybe at that point, Tina tells him that she wants more. She wants to be official. She wants to leave Otis and she wants him to leave whoever he's with. And he's scared about this. He doesn't want that to happen. And things go south while they're together. Absolutely possible. I would need to have access to the case files to see what investigators did to confirm that it was physically impossible for James to be the guy we're looking for. And if they did it, I'm good with it. But I would like to see that with my own eyes and determine that wherever he was, let's say he worked until 5:30 and the job site was 2.5 hours away. Well, then he's off. He's clear. Nothing else to look at here. He's not our guy. But that hasn't been publicly released. And I don't know why it hasn't been, because that's not going to hurt the case. If he's clear, then clear him. So that would be something that I would be looking into. The next person we're going to transition to is the one you're all thinking about, and that's Adam, for the obvious reasons. None of what I'm saying tonight, I want to make this perfectly clear, is to disparage or disrespect Tina. If she was having an affair, obviously not a good thing, but it doesn't mean that she deserved what happened to her. And so we have to separate the two, and we just have to be objective and logical about this. There are multiple pieces of evidence that suggest she was having an affair, at least with one person, the coworker. And so it's not unreasonable to assume that she may have also been having an affair with Adam, especially with the rumors circulating. This just didn't come out of thin air. Couple that with his behavior after her disappearance, which Otis reported, and then the glaring piece of evidence that Tina was found in a location that the public did not have access to. Only the employees at Cecil Field had access to, and Adam was an employee. That's not something you can dismiss. And then just to add a little sugar on top, you have this guy making multiple efforts to throw off the polygraph test by implementing multiple tactics to maybe alter the results. Why would you do that if you don't have anything to hide? Listen, if you don't like the polygraph or you don't trust it, don't take it. We've talked about polygraphs before. We understand that the results can be inaccurate. We get that. But if you go in there to use these deceptive tactics to try to paint yourself as this good guy, we have a phrase for that. It's called consciousness of guilt. you feel prior to taking this test that you're going to fail it. And the only reasonable explanation that I can come to is you know you got something to hide. Stepping back for a minute, you have to ask yourself, what is he concerned about? What does he think he's going to lie about? Is it just as simple as, oh man, they're going to ask me if I had an affair with Tina, and the answer is yes, and I don't want my wife to know? Or is it something more significant where, yes, not only was he having an affair, but he's also responsible for her murder? We don't know. But I will say, just to be fair to Adam, because I try to be impartial to everybody, it could be as simple as the first explanation. He apparently has a good relationship with his wife. She's not aware of anything. And he knows, oh man, not only is this going to piss off my wife and probably end my marriage, but if they figure out that I was sleeping with Tina, they're going to assume that I'm the guy who killed her, even if he didn't. But yeah, I mean, looking at the totality of the circumstances, it's circumstantial in nature, but I'll be honest with you. There must have been something there that doesn't align the way I'm seeing it, or maybe there was some other pieces of evidence that would suggest reasonable doubt when it comes to Adam, because just based on what we know so far, I'm actually surprised that investigators didn't take a shot at him and charge him. And then finally, to go back to what I talked about at the very beginning of this episode, I said that sometimes the secrets the victims hold are even more important than the suspects. Let me explain. If we knew who the suspect was, this case would already be solved. But even without knowing who the suspect is, if we had access to everything in Tina's life, where she was going, who she was talking to, who she was fraternizing with, more than likely this case would be solved. Because more than likely the person responsible for her death is someone she was communicating with, someone she knew, someone more than likely that she was having an affair with. So if we had access to everything, if we knew all her secrets, we would have solved this case. And so I say that to say, if there's anything that can be done to develop a stronger profile on Tina, we need to do it. We need to turn over every single rock, regardless of how painful it may be to find those answers. Because if we really understand Tina's life at the time of her disappearance, I think this one's solvable. And that brings up one more scenario that I want to discuss. The idea that we don't know all of her secrets. And although I mentioned James and I mentioned Adam, is there someone else? Is there someone that nobody really knew about? Another person that she was interacting with? Maybe things weren't going good with James. Maybe things were fizzling with Adam. Maybe he was trying to build a stronger relationship with his wife. Was there another man that she was seeing? And this was something new and she didn't know a lot about them. And unfortunately, she didn't realize that they had ulterior motives. Is it possible that she met up with this person and they went somewhere and somehow this person had access to Cecil Field even though they weren't an employee? What that would be, I don't know. I'm just throwing it out there to you. But here's what I do know. Here's what I believe. When Tina called and said she was going to the grocery store, she lied. She had no intention on going there. There's no evidence to suggest she ever went to that grocery store. I believe the location she was always going to was that Walmart. And as I said in the episode, this was a Walmart that she wouldn't normally go to. And that makes perfect sense. She's not going to go to the shopping mall or the grocery store that she normally goes to, where she may see neighbors and friends and family. She's going to go to a location that's out of the ordinary, something she wouldn't normally go to. And she's going to park in the very back of the lot. And when whoever comes to meet her, the things she's going to take are her purse and her keys. That's what you would normally take. You don't want someone to break into your car. You're going to need your keys, but you don't want someone to break into your car and take your purse. So you're going to take that with you, knowing that you're going to be coming back in a short period of time. And so from there, they went to the secondary location where they were going to hang out. I'm not going to speculate on what they were going to do. We're all adults here. You can use your own imagination. But I truly believe that is most likely what happened here. It may not be Adam. It may be somebody else. Adam would have motive as well, right? Wanting to maintain his relationship with his wife. Maybe Tina wanted more, like I mentioned with James, and Adam wasn't having it. So while they were at Cecil Field, which may have been a location that they had been to before, knowing that it wasn't accessible to the public. This would give them some privacy. Maybe things went south that day. And while they were there having this heated discussion, it got out of hand and Adam killed Tina in the process. Or it was someone else who, again, also had access to that location. I don't know how many employees worked there. And the same situation played out where they went to Cecil Field. Things got crazy. They killed Tina and they dispersed her body in that location, probably taking some of her belongings and spreading them in different locations so it wouldn't all be found at that exact site. So where do we go from here? First off, I don't know where Tina's car is, but that is something that I would hope was processed extensively. I believe that it was based on what I've read. You would be looking at the DNA as well. There's always advancements in science and technology. I don't know the condition of Tina's body when it was found. I have to imagine it was pretty bad. But if there's anything you can do to try to extract DNA in any form at this point, based on the new technology we have, that needs to be done. And as I always say in these episodes, if the investigators are watching this case right now, as I'm kind of laying it all out, and they need financial resources, I'm available. I'm easy to get a hold of. If you have something that has the potential to lead somewhere and you just need the money or the private lab to do it, I'm your guy. No questions asked. Just let me know what you need. Give me a little information so I know it's not just going to go into a random general fund and we'll make it happen. You'll have the money the next week. And then finally, something I mentioned earlier, we need to go back to Adam's wife. If she's still around and there's been some time now, maybe she's willing to speak. You got to go back and talk to her and really dive into why they separated. What was this change right after Tina's disappearance where they basically separated states? Is she willing to talk at this point? Does she have some guilt? You have to play into that. You have to go reach out to her. You have nothing to lose and everything to gain. And if that doesn't work, or in addition to that, you also have to look into Tina again. Treat her almost as the suspect, right? You want to develop a complete profile. You want to go into every shadow, every corner that you can get into, and you want to explore every person or possibility you can think of. You want to know where she was going, who she was with, who she was talking to at work. Did she talk to anybody else who had a connection to Cecil Field? These are things that are going to be daunting after 25 years, but that's what we're getting paid for. So if there's an investigator who wants to make a name for himself or herself, and they want to solve a case that's at this point seems impossible, this is the one you need to reopen, because we've seen it with the Long Island serial killer, where it wasn't some new piece of evidence. It was a detective who was ambitious and came in with a fresh perspective and read the report from the beginning. And by doing so, they found an incident report that initially was kind of glossed over. And ultimately, that's what led to identifying Rex Huerman. And that's what I'm hoping for here. So if you guys are watching this, investigators in that area working this case, this is your sign. Go into the, you know, file room, break that case open, start reading. But as I always say, we're not just going to rely on one thing. We're not going to hope that there's some type of technology that can help or a investigator is going to take the initiative. We're going to leverage everything we have and also hope that maybe someone who's from that neighborhood who worked with Tina or maybe worked at Cecil Field knows something and for some reason they just haven't came forward yet. If you're listening to this or watching it, I know it's been a long time. It's not too late. Her son is out there right now still wondering what happened to his mom. So just to recap, 27-year-old Tina McQuaig was last seen on March 15th, 2000, leaving work at Shands of Jacksonville after telling her family she planned to stop at the grocery store before heading home. But Tina never made it back. 4 days later, her car was found abandoned in a Walmart parking lot on Normandy Boulevard. More than 2 years later, Tina's remains were discovered at Cecil Field, just miles from where her car had been found earlier. Although investigators ruled her death a homicide, more than 25 years later, no one has been arrested in Tina's murder, and the case remains unsolved. If you have any information in Tina's case, you can contact the Jacksonville Sheriff's Office at 904-630-0500. You can also send an email to jsocrimetips@jackssheriff.org or contact Crime Stoppers at 1-866-845-TIPS. As always, my final words go out to the friends and family of Tina, specifically Otis and Tyler. I know it's been 25, 26 years and you have to move on in life. And you also know that Tina's not going to come home. But to live every day knowing that the person who killed her is still out there somewhere is unacceptable. We should not allow that to happen. That should never be okay. As a community, we have to keep talking about Tina's story. We have to continue to put pressure on the people working this case. We also have to make sure that the person out there knows that they could wake up tomorrow and the cops could be right behind them making that arrest. All it's going to take is that one piece of information. And as long as we keep Tina's story alive, we keep that as a possibility that I'm going to get to sit right here and let you guys know that we finally got him. I really hope I get that opportunity, not only for you guys, not only for your family, but most importantly, for Tina. That's going to do it for me, guys. Until next episode, everyone stay safe out there. I'll see you soon.
Hi, I'm Angie Hicks, co-founder of Angie. When you use Angie for your home projects, you know all your jobs will be done well. Roof repair? Done well. Kitchen sink install? Done well. Deck upgrades? Done well. Electrical upgrade? Done well. Angie's been connecting homeowners with skilled pros for nearly 30 years, so we know the difference between done and done well.
Angie, the one you trust to find the ones you trust. Find a pro for your project at Angie.com.
Any team that's tested AI tools for data has seen the pattern already. AI gives a different number than your BI tool. Metrics don't match across teams, and inevitably, users lose trust. It turns out, turning on AI is easy, but making it work on data is not. Hex AI was built to solve this. The key is nailing context. Hex is built to unify and curate your data context for agents. Data teams can observe, govern, and continuously improve every AI answer, so answers get smarter the more your team asks. The result? Your entire organization asks data questions in natural language and trusts the answers. Not because the AI got lucky, because it knows your business and its data. Because that's what an AI analytics platform should do. Join data teams from Cursor, Lovable, Ramp, AWS, and over 2,000 more at hex.ai.
This is Jana Kramer from Wind Down with Jana Kramer. Hey, quick question for the parents listening right now. When's the last time your kid asked for something and you actually felt good saying yes? Because lately, a lot of families have been hearing the same thing. Can I have Lingo Kids, please? And here's the thing. Lingo Kids is the number one entertainment platform for young kids with more than 4,000 interactive games, songs, and shows. Astronauts, wild animals, superheroes, dinosaurs. It's literally everything kids love all in one place. So when they ask for it, you can actually feel good saying yes. Download Lingo Kids for free and start exploring today, or unlock even more amazing content with Lingo Kids Plus. And if you go with the yearly plan, you can save up to 60%. Search Lingo Kids in the App Store or Google Play. Lingo Kids, everything kids love.